Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Nerys.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander, the journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
We've lost all contact with the space station.
What the hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel and Andrew Layla.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us in this podcast adventure that we call Listen to the Prophets. For those of you that are new to the show, and I don't know, we've been running this for like months now, this is a podcast where some amazing podcasters, and myself, discuss, review, and dissect every episode of the wrongfully maligned Star Trek series Deep Space Nine. And today we continue our look at the Season 2 episodes with Episode 12 of the season, a show entitled The Alternate, where we learned a little more about Odo's origins as well as his daddy issues. Thankfully, it's nothing like the daddy issues that the Cardassian kids or Kardashian kids are probably having right now with good old Papa Jenner, or maybe Mama Jenner now. But this isn't a show to tackle transgender identity issues, thank God. But before we get to the episode itself, let me introduce myself. I'm Sean Engel, and let me introduce my two amazing podcast buddies and even more amazing friends, Mr. Paul Spataro and Mr. Andrew Leyland.
Hello.
Hello.
I was thinking, this is a show where some amazing podcasters listen to the three of us do it.
see, with our, I've checked our downloads, and yeah, it's probably just podcasters who are listening to us. We're not, we need to get our name out. We need to get more people listening to this. But, everyone promote this show. Go to iTunes and review it. I haven't checked iTunes recently. Maybe we've got new iTunes reviews.
Yeah, review us. Come on. Tell everybody that we're great. Lie.
Five stars.
Two thumbs up.
So, I might as well ask this. Do we have any Star Trek news that we want to talk about before we get into the episode?
Well, in the last week, the complete script to the third movie leaked online.
Wow. Have you read it?
I've totally read it.
And I've already done the rewrite.
And do you think it's going to be as good as Simon Pegg has been touting it to be?
Against all odds, it looks like it's going to be fantastic. And I'll just create an alternate version for you. To nobody's surprise, it's going to be shit.
So I can basically edit that into when we do find out what the script is.
Yeah.
Because this will be dropping in like 3 months, and probably they should know about it by then.
I was trying to allow for future people.
Well, that's very nice of you. I appreciate you doing that. Now my computer is locked up. Okay, we're going to wait until iTunes gets the hell out of the way. Oh, great. Now everything's locked up. I'm hoping this is recording. I opened up iTunes to try and see if we had any reviews, and nothing.
Oh, iTunes is notorious for killing computers.
Oh, God. Okay, there we go. It's back. Okay, but, so no news.
Is good news.
I guess that's good news. So do we want to just jump right into a synopsis of the episode?
Might as well.
Do we want to bullshit about other stuff? I mean, the season... Yeah.
Please, somebody say something.
Last time... a couple episodes ago, we had no Star Trek news, and basically we started talking about comic books and TV shows and anything. Did we all?
And it was the highest downloaded show we've had.
Yes, it was. Topped all. We had 100,000 downloads. Why we don't have more iTunes reviews is beyond me now. With 100,000 downloads of that one show, what the
and
hell
we
is
we get
wrong?
$1 a pop.
If only. But no, when you. Have we all seen like the season finales of some of the shows. Did we watch, you know, did we talk about the season finale of The Flash last time out? Because by the time this comes out...
I don't think we did, and it was awesome.
It was brilliant. There was a little plot hole, but it was brilliant.
Well, what did you think the plot hole was?
If Eobard Thawne comes from an alternate timeline where Barry became the Flash much later on, then why did the Edward Thawne of this alternate timeline from the one he's from killing himself make him disappear completely? He's from an alternate timeline. The alternate timeline's Eddie Thawne. It didn't die.
I'm not totally convinced that we will not be seeing Eobard again.
Yeah. Well, my in-show explanation is that when young Barry goes back in time to save his mum, old Barry tells him not to, and that action creates a third timeline that Eobard can't possibly know anything about, and that means that the Edward killing himself Eobard disappears, because that's something he had no contingency for, and he didn't know it would happen.
Yeah, and I mean, there's all sorts of timeline paradox things that came out of that episode. And I think any time you get into the "I'm going to do something in the past to change the future" storylines, you're always running the risk of... And you know what? It's beyond running the risk. I think you're always creating some sort of time paradox that's going to exist in the episode as far as discussion goes. But I still thought it was awesome. And I think opens up the possibility for so many things. I'm thinking next season we're going to have Harrison Wells... for real, as opposed to Eobard Thawne in Harrison Wells' body, which makes me happy, because I thought he was a very charismatic actor, and I thought he added a lot to the show when he was on screen. So I'm happy that he's going to still be there. We saw things in the timeline, like Killer Frost and Barry in prison and the Flash Museum, and I'm wondering if we're going to see those things during the season. I am very confident we're going to see Killer Frost next season, but I'm not sure about those other things. And we saw Jay Garrick's helmet.
Yes.
Oh, that was, God, that I was want nice. Jay Garrick to be on there next season.
You know, and there was, of course, there's been mentioned the Speed Force before, and, you know, it was really a wonderful, and the thing is, they've so embraced the idea of this being a comic book show. They're not like the Nolan films and trying to ground it in reality. They're like, you know, if he runs fast enough, he can travel in time. If he runs around this particle accelerator and we shoot a hydrogen atom at him, he can open up a wormhole. Sure, yeah, that works, you know, because it's a comic. And that's what I love about the Flash show, is they're not shying away from the comic bookiness of it. They're openly embracing it and allowing, you know, it's making it fun. And that's what I have hopes for the Supergirl show as well. It looks like they're trying to embrace that as well, that it's supposed to be embracing its comic book roots and having fun with it, rather than trying to be ultra realistic and saying that people would, you know, if someone with this sort of power set and this sort of abilities, you know, people would look down on them, you know, the sort of dark, grim feel that we're getting from Batman versus Superman. So I'm liking the TV shows. I'm looking forward to next season, The Flash. I'm looking forward to Supergirl. You know, even like we said, Legends of Tomorrow or whatever. Is that the one with the Atom and all that?
The trailer for that was absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And the Atom actually Legends shrinks. It's not Iron Man.
Yes.
Yeah, well, he was working on that in the last episode of Arrow. So he was working on the shrinking thing. I don't know when this episode goes up, if it will officially aired, but I have seen the Supergirl pilot.
Yeah, okay. What a shock. They let it slip out because they didn't mean to.
Yeah, well, I was stunned by
didn't
that.
Didn't they kind of do that sort of with The Flash?
Not sort of. They absolutely did it.
Okay.
But then they claim, you know, they try to make it seem like it's not their own doing, which is just such bullshit.
Yeah. Well, and so do you want to give us general opinions of it?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought Melissa Benoist was really cute in the role and really charming. She's my main problem with the Smallville version was Laura Vandervoort is a catwalk model. She's tall with big cheekbones, and that's not Kara. Kara should be cute rather than drop-dead gorgeous, and Benoist is brilliant in it. She was really entertaining. The supporting cast are all really good. Pretty much, if you watch the 6-minute trailer, you've pretty much seen it, and you can probably figure it out.
And is it that? Isn't that kind of what we got with the Flash trailer, the 6 minute yeah. Flash trailer?
Yeah, pretty much. It was really good, and I really enjoyed it. Getting used to Jimmy Olsen being suave and sophisticated, that's going to take time. But other than that, it was a great show.
Well, if we consider this Jimmy Olsen to be not the sort of teenage character that he's grown up and matured.
In the show he explains that he was looking for a different challenge now that he's aged a bit, and he's taking this job for Catco, and that's how he's got here.
I don't like that they're changing the continuity, because isn't it really supposed to be Jenny Olsen?
No.
Well, maybe this is why Jimmy wasn't in Man of Steel, so they could have him in this show. I mean, now, I don't know how long ago.
I'm sorry, I was being snarky.
They mentioned that Jenny was not supposed to be an analog for the Olsen.
I'm sorry, I'm using that word too often, but come on.
I completely trust Zack Snyder and everything he does. He's a great filmmaker.
You could have put a bit more emotion into that.
No, I could not have. But yeah, Supergirl looks fun. I'm glad, I probably won't go seek it out because I showed the 6 minute thing to my younger daughter, and she was like, "Dad, when does that come on?" I'm like, "It's not until the fall, honey." It's like, "I want to watch it now." And I'm like, so if my little 11-year-old daughter is interested in it, and it's gonna be on the night that I'm gonna be home, it's gonna become a sort of family watch thing. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, Anya watched it with me and she enjoyed it as well, but she was a bit miffed that she has to wait till November for episode 2.
Yeah.
On the other comic book front, I am now very slowly moving along, and I'm at episode 13. I have one more episode to watch. I'm at episode 13 on Daredevil. It's taken me forever to get through it, but I'm enjoying the heck out of that one.
Yeah, I think Daredevil was great. And there seems to be an awful lot of people who just want to pit one against the other. And I think I have said as well that after watching Daredevil, Arrow seemed light and sunny. Mm-hmm. But that's just because they're on completely different networks. Daredevil is allowed to do things that Arrow wouldn't get away with. Arrow also has to please the corporate masters of the CW by having soap opera crap in it.
Yep.
And some of that soap opera crap is done quite well, and some of it isn't. My only concern with Arrow is losing Brandon Routh next year for Legends of Tomorrow or whatever means that you're losing one of the reasons I watch the show.
I'm ambivalent on Brandon Routh on Arrow. I thought he was good on it, but he was definitely not a reason why I was tuning in. So, you know, I'm okay with him moving on to Legends of Tomorrow, and I'm hoping he'll be good on that. And again, I've just been a little bothered by the fact that I wasn't sure they were actually going to ever have him shrink, and it bothered me to have him be the Atom and full-sized, basically. He was Iron Man.
Yeah. I did see on Facebook someone posted the first image of the character who's going to be playing Jessica Jones for the Netflix.
Kristen Ritter.
Yeah, she looked very... It was a very black leather suit type thing. Yeah, it wasn't quite Black Widow, shiny leather, but she looked very gritty. I liked it.
See, in the comics she just wears normal clothes, so I've seen a picture of Kristen Ritter with, is it Mike Colton who's going to be Luke Cage, but it was one of them blurry they were in a car things, so it's not a proper look at her.
No, this was like a promo shot, so it was pretty much her, full on. It looked good. So, I still haven't had a chance. I'm so far behind on stuff. I need to get caught up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I need to get caught up on Daredevil. I've been watching iZombie. Still been enjoying that. The comic book shows are really doing well out there. And plus, we've got tons of stuff coming up, so...
Yeah, I'm a little behind. I still have to finish my iZombie watching. I have to catch up on iZombie because it's not done yet. I have to finish S.H.I.E.L.D. I have that all on my DVR, as well as, I think, the last 6 episodes of Gotham. So, I have a ways to go. But Kristen Ritter, just to touch on her for a minute. First of all, not the daughter of John Ritter. Although she does look like she could be. The only thing I know her from is Breaking Bad. And it's
hard to... She was in Veronica Mars.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, she's in Veronica Mars. And she's in the Veronica Mars movie as well. And she's in Gilmore Girls.
It's hard to picture her from her Breaking Bad role as an action heroine, but that doesn't mean that she can't. It just means it's a very, very different role.
Yeah, in Veronica Mars, she was Thingio's daughter, a guy from Police Academy.
Steve Guttenberg?
Steve Guttenberg, that's
not,
the
not
one.
Not the guy who did the sound effects?
No, not him.
Michael, what's his name?
Michael Annoying Guy?
Yes, exactly. That was his last name. That was his surname.
No, he was in The Fifth Element.
Oh, no, that was friggin' Chris Tucker.
Chris Annoying Guy.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, Chris Annoying Guy is definitely his name. Yeah, so we had some good comic book talk. So that's, you know, we can't put Star Trek stuff because we have no information on that. So comic book talk. Get used to that, folks. But do we want to go ahead and go into the synopsis of the episode?
Alternate.
Odo is on a search for his past.
Dr. Mora thinks he may have discovered the origin of my people.
A perilous journey that leads to a startling discovery.
I think I may have found what we're looking for.
Now, an evil life force is loose on the station.
Intruder, alert!
Where the hell did it come from?
But is Odo trying to find it?
I'll be running the investigation.
Or protect it?
What do you think they'll do with you?
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yes, the alternate. This was the 12th episode of Season 2 of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Aired the week of January 5th of 1994. It was written by Bill Dial and Jim Trombetta and directed by David Carson. It had the main cast and included guest actors James Soylent as Dr. Mara Paul, Matt McKenzie as Dr. Weld Ram. That's an odd name. And of course, the synopsis comes, as always, from the Star Trek Deep Space Nine companion by Terry J. Erdman and Paula M. Block. Odo is not too terribly happy to see Dr. Mara Paul on Deep Space Nine. Mara is the scientist who was assigned to the shapeshifter after the Bajorans found him, and the memory of the days when he was a living experiment makes Odo very uncomfortable. But Mara has come with some news. Bajoran space probes have picked up signs of DNA similar to Odo's on a planet in the Gamma Quadrant. Mara would like to borrow a runabout to investigate. Sisko readily agrees, and soon Odo, Mara, Dax, and a scientist named Weld are on their way. Along the way, Mara entertains Dax with stories of Odo's early days, much the way a parent would speak about his child, if that child had been a land specimen. The foursome beam to the surface of the planet and explore some stone ruins, finding a tiny life form that may be related to Odo. As they prepare to transport the back to the runabout, seismic activity rocks the planet and releases clouds of volcanic gas that incapacitate Mara, Dax, and Weld. But Odo, seemingly unaffected, acts quickly to get them back to the ship and then to the station. With Dax in the infirmary, O'Brien attempts to classify the life form the group has retrieved, but tells Odo the computer is having a tough time because the organism keeps changing and reproducing. That night, Kira summons Sisko with the disturbing news. Someone or something has ransacked and almost demolished the entire science lab. With the life form missing and no sign of a break-in, O'Brien theorizes that the life form may have caused the damage, and Sisko orders an intensive scan of the station to search for it. Guessing that the life form exited via the ventilation ducts, O'Brien conducts a search in the conduits and ultimately finds the life form, which appears dead, apparently unable to survive in the space station environment. That evening, as Bashir studies the inert remains of the lifeform, he is attacked by a large tentacled creature, Hentai. He fends it off with a laser scalpel, and the creature disappears into the ventilation docks. As Odo conducts an investigation, a recovered Dax compares the organic residue left behind by the creature that attacked Bashir to the remains of the planetary lifeform. They are not the same. But Mara recognizes the DNA pattern from the new sample at once. Leaving Dax, he heads for Odo and informs the shapeshifter that the sample is from him. Odo protests that he was regenerating Miss Pale during both attacks, but Mara postulates that he wasn't. Searching for an answer, Odo suggests that perhaps the volcanic gases affected him after all. Mara knows he's probably right, but he doesn't want to lose this fleeting chance to get Odo to come back to Bajor with him, once again to become a subject of study. But that's the last thing Odo wants. At the peak of his panic and fury, Odo morphs into the creature, and Mara flees in terror. Realizing that in some ways he's responsible for the situation, Mara finds Sisko, explains that the creature is Odo, and offers himself as bait to draw it out from hiding. The plan works, and the creature is captured, reverting to Odo. In the infirmary, Bashir works with Mora to cure Odo, eliminating all the traces of the gas from his cellular structure. Then Bashir leaves the two old acquaintances alone. Mora apologizes for the way he's treated Odo in the past, and Odo, at last able to forgive, begins to form a genuine bond with his mentor. And I enjoyed this episode, particularly for the fact that it's an Odo development episode. Odo's always been my favorite character on Deep Space Nine, and we're getting more into the idea that Odo comes from beyond the Alpha Quadrant, that he possibly has origins in the Delta Quadrant, or not the Delta, the Gamma Quadrant. We had that first season episode with Cliff DeYoung, where we had the little shape-shifting key thing, where we got the idea that Odo might be from the Gamma Quadrant. But we're getting more into this, and the fact that I know where this is going and I know how it relates to the Dominion and everything else just makes me more excited for this. It's also a good episode in dealing with sort of father issues and Odo's upbringing and his relationship with people, and overall I thought this was a pretty good episode.
It's a good one for background on Odo. I mean, James Sloyan's, he's a bit of a, you know, he's not particularly likable throughout the episode, and you kind of get the feeling he's manipulating him a bit, and you think there's going to be some big comeuppance for him, and there isn't, which was a bit odd in terms of story structure. But as far as Odo's character development go, yeah, it's quite an interesting one. There's a bit of Forbidden Planet to it, I thought. The creature from the id and all that stuff that's in Forbidden Planet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in fact, they mentioned that in the companion, that this borrowed heavily from Forbidden Planet, which isn't a bad science fiction thing to borrow from, in my opinion.
No, I didn't think they borrowed heavily, because it looked like they had to do that kind of thing because they didn't have a lot in the way of budget for this one. So it looked like it was more of necessity.
That was one of my criticisms of the episode, is I thought the effects of Odo as the creature were subpar and kind of pulled me out of the story a little bit.
Well, you know, you are looking at TV. You know, we're used to really dramatic effects nowadays on TV, and this was just the beginning. You know, Terminator 2 was, 91, I think, or 92 when it came out. So, you know, this is, and that had, you know, $100 million budget to do the morphing effects like this. It is subpar, considering what we saw in the theaters, but it wasn't so awful that it just took me out of it that much. I was okay with it, and for the time, I think it was all right.
I finished watching this episode, and I thought I liked it, but I should have liked it more. Mm-hmm. That there was some kind of missed opportunities here. I think they kind of, instead of making it a development or a revelation of Odo's relationship with Dr. Paul and you know, working a little bit more on that father-son thing that I think they had going, they had to put that extra little thing in there with the creature, which almost took away from it to me. I got a Lwaxana Troi vibe out of Dr. Paul, the way he dealt with Odo as compared to the way she dealt with Deanna. And I think that was intentional. I think he was supposed to be kind of the overbearing parent who was not cognizant of how uncomfortable he makes the child. And I thought René Auberjonois did a good job acting to kind of portray within Odo's social abilities how uncomfortable he was with the situation.
Especially that scene on the runabout where they're asking Odo to describe, you know, what he was like when he first started out and how he tried to communicate with them. And you've got Paul, you know, Dr. Paul or Dr. Mora interrupting every time that Odo starts to speak, trying to tell the story his way. It's the whole proud parent who doesn't necessarily understand their child and, you know, is maybe not accepting of how the child is developed and wants to tell the story their way. It was an interesting, you know, it's an interesting camaraderie between the two, and it would be nice to see, you know, if this relationship furthers any more in the series. I don't know whether we get more interaction with this character, or I can't remember if we get more interaction with this character later on in the series.
I don't remember if he comes back either, no.
I'm not certain. I think he does, but I'm not 100% certain. I got a kick out of the whole, you know, his having his hair like that and then Odo kind of reproducing that look. I was watching it, I was like, I know this actor from somewhere, James Sloyan, who played Dr. Mora, and I had to look it up. But then once I looked it up, I was like, of course, that he was the first person that got scammed by Robert Redford in the movie The Sting.
Oh, right. I see. I thought he's the Romulan defector in The Next Generation.
Yeah, he's had several Star Trek roles. But I knew it was something beyond that, and that's where I remembered him from, The Sting. But it took a little internet search to jog that memory. I thought he did good. I thought Rene Auberjonois did good. I don't think anybody else really had any opportunity to shine in the episode. We did see Morn again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's always a plus for an episode. And again, I thought it was good. I thought it was enjoyable, and I liked the. I was going to say world building, but it really wasn't world building as so much character building for Odo. But I just think, I don't know, the whole thing with the creature, I just think that could have been better done, and it kind of lost me a little.
Yeah, it's I don't know, it's one of them, it's well acted, and it's moderately well written, and the special effects budget is showing, and it's a little bit more ambitious than perhaps they could afford. And Rene Auberjonois is brilliant in it, but it's not a great show in and of itself. It's entertaining enough, but it's not a great one. It's better in hindsight in what it adds to Odo's character than it is a good episode in and of itself.
So do you think that the fact that we know where this is going to lead to, we know what's going to be coming, if we were watching this, you know, when it was airing, we might have a lower opinion of it. You know, since we do have the idea that this is going to lead to something, we're placing that memory or that knowledge of that and allowing that to affect our opinion of the show?
I'm going to say no.
No.
And I'm sorry, Andy, I'll give you a chance to rebut this in a second.
All right.
My thought process is, if I was watching this fresh as it was aired, I would already have a good amount of curiosity as to what Odo's background was. So I would watch it basically with the same kind of anticipation of, oh, you know, let me learn a little bit more about him. And I think that still would add to it the same way it does, even knowing where we're eventually going to go with his character. Go ahead, Andy. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, I was just going to say, I think it does. It does, when you know everything about the changelings later, I think this one, it falls into that overall story arc quite well. I still don't think this one was great, but it wasn't boring or bad.
I did notice something, you know, in the episode when Sisko is taking Odo along and he's talking about Dr. Mora and everything. Sisko gives him the story about losing his father. You know, that in the end that his father passed away. And correct me if I'm wrong, but later in the series, don't we actually meet Sisko's father? Isn't he a cook in New Orleans?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And he becomes a fairly significant character on the show.
So I was just kind of surprised that, you know, Sisko made this comment about him losing his father, and, you know, it's going to get glossed over later in the series that his father didn't actually die, so...
I think that when his father does appear, I think they may acknowledge that. I thought you said your father died or something, you know, like, I think it may be that him and his father had a falling out of some sort, and he kind of dismissed him, but then they reconcile, maybe.
That could have been it. You know, like I said, it's been a long time since I knew that his father came back, and he was played by one of the characters who played, like, the Starfleet president. Or no, it wasn't the Starfleet president, but because the Starfleet president was, what's his name from?
Yeah. From RoboCop.
Yeah, from RoboCop. Yeah, he was the bad guy. I was thinking the dad from That 70s Show as well. Yeah, well, I try as little as possible to think of That 70s Show, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely know they do bring in the dad, and again, I think he becomes, you know, a fairly significant recurring character. And I guess, you know, it's something they kind of put a pin in that one, that when they do introduce him, let's see if they do explain away this story that he told. And I thought that also, I think we all saw Dr. Mora as a father figure for Odo, much the way that Sisko did. So when he tells his story, he's thinking he's giving him, you know, a nice analogy. Whereas I think Odo at this point really didn't think of him as a father figure. So he's almost like, why are you telling me this story? And I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe he was just, maybe Sisko was just misguided in the attempt, and he was trying to pass this off as a sort of life lesson story to Odo when Odo's relationship with Dr. Mora was more, you know, experiment and, you know, was more scientifically based rather than paternally based.
But then at the end, when Dr. Mora kind of says basically he wants to be involved in his life and, you know, maybe he hasn't done right by him all the time, it's almost like the beginning of that true parent-child relationship. And apparently Dr. Mora thought they always had that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's kind of one of the things that I think you get in parent-child relationships. Sometimes it's not until the child grows up and matures and goes out on their own that they actually have that sort of respect for their parent.
Is that going to happen?
I you know, unfortunately, I know it happened with me. You know, I kind of, you know, I respected my parents. I enjoyed them, but I didn't really understand, you know, what they did until I matured and became an adult and got married and had kids of my own, that I understood, you know, what they were trying to do and how effective their upbringing on me was. And I think this is kind of the beginning of Odo feeling that with Dr. Mora here in the story.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that take on it. And that's what I think brings this episode up. Otherwise, if we were just working it again on the story of the creature and all of that stuff, I think this would be a below average episode.
Yeah, it did also, you know, I did kind of have some feel that it was trying to ape Alien a lot. And I got that sort of from, you know, there are many scenes where it's, you know, crawling through the ventilation shaft, especially O'Brien doing that. The scene in the science lab where you've got the little thing that the alien life form was in, had it burst out, very much like the chest burster scene with John Hurt. So, you know, trying to ape Alien is not a bad thing, but I think it was just they just didn't have the effects budget and just really the time to let it simmer out like it would a good, you know, sort of homage to Alien.
Yeah, you know, I hadn't really, as I was watching it, I hadn't made the connection to that, but I do think you're right. I do think there's a little bit of an effort to create that look and that claustrophobic feel. And again, I think if the effects budget was a little higher, if they could have done just a little bit more with him as the creature, I think that would have possibly been more effective. But to me, it almost seemed like, you know, silly science fiction. All right, we're going to have a creature, so you know what? We're going to have a bunch of rubber tentacles we're going to dangle in front of the screen to make it look like there's this giant creature here. And it like I said, it kind of took me out of it a little bit because it just seemed so phony.
Now, most of the effects to me looked like they were CG, and like we said, it's budget-wise, the CG wasn't just up to par. Do you think it might have benefited if they would have done some practical effects, if they would have had actual tentacles sort of lashing out at them rather than just these CG morphing effects for Odo?
I'm not sure. I think they needed to make him into something that would be truly terrifying in appearance, and I'm not sure how they could have gone about doing that.
Yeah, well, obviously this was after, you know, John Carpenter's The Thing. If they could have gotten something that route, you know,
I think that would have helped. Yeah,
you know, that may have been cost prohibitive as well, and you know, the fact that they wanted to use more CG rather than practical effects maybe could have hindered them in doing that. But if they could have done something like that, you know, just even if they just did some of the effects where it was, you had the humanoid looking characters, but they just, their faces shifted in some sort of way, which would have easily been done with Odo since he's supposedly an amorphic blob.
You know, nobody else in the show really had any kind of a spotlight at all.
No, everyone was pretty much relegated to, you know, it was essentially an Odo show. It was character developing for him, and you know, it was good to see Odo his character developed. It was interesting to see his father figure brought in the show. But yeah, other than that, unless you're a big fan of Odo, there's not more, you know, there's not much of the ensemble cast in the episode.
The only like other character moment of note to me was when and it's such a short thing, it's not really, you know, a big part of the episode, but just when Quark you know, reacts to him, father is here, you know, just like, you know, I liked that. I thought that was well done. Yeah. What'd you think overall, Andy? We haven't gotten your take on things.
I don't know. There's nothing bad with it. I kind of expected better from an episode directed by David Carson, who did yesterday's Enterprise and then went on to do Generations. Renaud Bourgeois's great in it. It's all right. It was entertaining enough. It seems like we're in a bit of a slump in terms of episodes. If they're not bad, they're not great.
Yeah, that's true. we're not hitting on.
No, we've not got to that point. It seemed like towards the end of the first season and the beginning of the second, they were really hitting their stride and we were getting a really good run of episodes. And then this middle section of season two here, it's mediocre. It's not bad and it's not good. Nothing outright sucks, except maybe Rivals, but nothing's really blown us away either. And you're looking, thankfully I'm looking ahead, and Andy Robinson's coming back.
Woohoo.
So it's nice to have Andy Robinson back in a couple of episodes. And then we've got a Mirror Universe episode coming up, and we've got all the Klingons coming back, and then the Maquis storyline kicks off. So it looks like the end of the season we're going to get back into high gear again. But I think we've had a run of four or five episodes now that just haven't been particularly interesting. And this is one of them. There's nothing inherently wrong with it. And, you know, if there was nothing else on and I was channel surfing, I may leave it on in the background, but I wouldn't go out of my way to watch this one again.
I could understand that. I could probably sympathize with that somewhat. Well, do we want to go ahead and give ratings? Do we have anything else we want to say about it?
Nah, I'm done.
Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead. You know, like I said, I'm probably going to be the highest rating of this. I'm going to give it 3 bars. You know, like I said, I'm always glad to see an Odo-centric episode. I'm glad that we're getting more character development of him. I'm interested in finding out what his origins are. He's the only life form, you know, that we know of who's a shapeshifter. Well, unless you call that a character that Iman played and, you know, Star Trek VI, but, you know, that's a completely different story. But, you know, I agree with you, Andy. It's not necessarily a bad episode, but it's not one of those ones where you're going to go, now this is an episode that I have to see. So, 3 bars for me. That's it. Next.
You or me?
Yeah, go on, Paul. You go first.
Well, you're not going to be the highest rated. You're going to be at worst, tied for the highest, because I also gave it 3 bars. 3 to me is average. I think that the creature storyline was below average. The parent-father relationship or father-son relationship thing was slightly above average, and that even it out, it comes out to a 3 overall. The disappointment really comes in that if it's giving us a background on Odo, it just should have been better. That's all.
Yeah, I think it was slightly below average, so I'm going to go 2.5. It wasn't bad, but it's not great.
Well, that's, you know, that's not that much of a variation from us. You know, that's a half point lower. So, you know, essentially an average episode. You know, nothing to write home about, but nothing to deride like Rivals or Melora.
Yeah. Okay. I like the makeup effects when Odo starts his incredible melting man thing.
Yeah, they still haven't gotten, you know, they still haven't gotten the melting on the suit yet. I think it'll come in later seasons when they get a bit more budget to allow the suit to melt as well. But yeah, they basically got his face and hands all melty. So.
Now they did touch on he asks if the suit is part of him or if he's wearing it. Mm-hmm. So they never, and he never answered the question, which I kind of liked. And I also thought one of the father-son things that was very low Oksana Troy like, was when he says, still haven't gotten the ears right, huh? But that's okay. That's okay. Don't worry. They're hard.
It's hard. See, that just befuddles me. He can't get the ears down, but he can get fingernails down. If you look at his hands, he's got nails. Those have got to be difficult to do as well. So,
but he can make cloth wrinkle when he sits down as well. Mm-hmm. That's really talented.
Well, you know, obviously cloth is significantly easier to do than earlobes.
He can do feet, which puts him above Rob Liefeld.
Oh!
Zap. Okay. Well, unfortunately, I didn't have to contact Blaine to ask him about the scientific factuality of this episode. So, unfortunately, we don't have any emails, so please write into the show. We'd love to read your emails on the air. And leave us iTunes reviews as well. That'd be good.
Whether it's a reaction to something we said or did, or a review of your own of the episodes, or if you have Russian bank accounts that you'd like us to invest in. Mm-hmm. All right, I guess we're done.
Yep, we are finished. Go ahead, Andy. Yes, what?
I'm sorry, go ahead, because I was going to do post-episode talk, but go ahead, finish.
Okay. We need to find out what's coming out next time, Andy.
I'm just looking for the applause to book. Oh, right. Next time on an all-new episode of Deep Space Nine. I've actually not got a clue, because I'm looking in the Deep Space Nine companion, and I don't remember this episode at all.
It's called Armageddon Game.
But other than that, I got absolutely nothing.
So, yeah, it's that mid-season slump where...
Yep, so next time on an all-new episode, we will talk about an episode of Deep Space Nine.
We're so professional.
So the question is whether or not I will be there to be discussing it with you or not.
Yeah, well, yeah, the next time we're going to be recording, we'll be, Paul will be with the hordes of Two True Freaks, podcasters and listeners up at Emerald City, Eternal Con.
Eternal Con. My suggestion would have been, maybe, you could substitute one of our guest hosts, Dr. Bill or Gene, as in place of me, but both of them will be here, so
yeah,
that will not work.
Okay, well, but we'll see about doing something. Maybe we can work something out.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to pick a different time to record, that might work, or if you guys do it without me, you have my blessing.
Well, I appreciate that. It won't be the same show if we do record it without you, Paul.
You do need an angry old man on every episode.
Well, you fill that quota wonderfully.
I do. It's just picture Clint Eastwood from Gran Torino.
Get off my lawn. Well, we're gonna get out of this podcast, everyone. So have a good night, day, whatever. We'll catch you next time.
So long, folks.
Bye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.